So I want to thank you guys for coming out on this day to help me celebrate Jill's birthday. You thought it was Easter, but we're here to celebrate Jill's birthday. And Alan Jenkins made a great point, Jill. We got you flowers. She wasn't real happy that it was on Easter. Then we had to remind her. It happens like every 8 years, right? 7 years, something like that. If her birthday was on Christmas, now that would be bad. Happy birthday. I didn't get you anything but flowers. Because it's Easter. So I don't know about any of you guys, but I really needed today. I needed Easter to get here. I needed the Lent, I needed Holy Week, I needed everything building up to this because, well, it's been a rough last couple of months in a lot of our lives, right? There's a lot of people I care about are in the hospital, not doing well, and there's people who I've done funerals for that I care about so much, and so people I know going through divorce and relationship problems. And it just seems like the last 6 weeks, 5 weeks, it's just been a pile on of all the hurt just coming on. And so this Easter is extra special because I need today to be reminded. I need to be reminded about where my hope really is and what I really trust in. And I know some of you, because I've talked to some of you as your pastor, are going through the same type of thing with anxieties and fears and stress and doubt and grief. And we're all kind of in this together. And I needed today because I needed to remember in the midst of everything I'm feeling, of all the stress, anxiety, the grief, the sadness, the loneliness, all of that, I needed to remember what today is. I needed to reassure myself of where my hope was and where my hope lies. And what I love about Easter is, well, that's what this does. I mean, I love the flowers and love the crowds, and I love that these guys have donated their time doing it for free. I think that's great. Go ahead. There, see? And they have been troopers. Saturday, they were here, and then they've heard me already today. Now they got to listen and pretend they're interested. But I love today because it reminds me. And I think about where our world is in our country, and this is the only day we say this, really. And, you know, I've never once heard anyone say, you know, the stock market is risen. It is risen indeed. I've never heard that, right? I've never heard anyone yell, the gross national product is, the employment rate, none of that. It's the affirmation of what today is. Christ is risen, he is risen indeed. Now, I want to be honest, I was raised Catholic, and it was just something we always said, something we always did, and I never really paid that much attention to the word indeed until I was in seminary. It was in seminary that I realized how important the indeed really is. You see, my favorite professor in all my classes, a guy named Schubert Ogden, and his idea of the resurrection was, well, it was a little odd to me, right? It was a little strange. Because what Dr. Ogden believed is that the resurrection was more like a metaphor, right? He believed that what happened after Jesus died is that the disciples begin to remember what he taught, and they begin to think a lot about Jesus, and then they remembered what he taught about the resurrection, and so they started preaching this resurrection. And for him, the resurrection was more of a symbol, if you will. And I remember when he taught that one day, I just wanted to look at him, but I was afraid of him, so I didn't. But I wanted to look at him. I just want to say, really? I want to be in your church on Easter morning as you preach the resurrection that way. Because I believe something totally different. See, because what I witness in the resurrection, in the biblical story, is this group of men and women who were on the, well, they were losers. They were the outcast. And they followed this guy, Jesus, and when he died, they were afraid. And they hid. But yet, something transformed them. Something changed in them that then, well, that allowed them to all of a sudden be bold. In fact, so bold that on 50 days after, they preached a sermon and the church was born. And it had to be something to me more than a symbol or a metaphor that would allow them to do that, that would allow them to risk their lives and everything for, well, to proclaim a resurrection that was simply an idea. See, because I believe it really happened. And I believe when we stand here and proclaim Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, we're declaring that we believe in ways we can't understand or explain that this day happened. Now, I was a political science major and love history, and one of my favorite characters in history to study was a guy named Winston Churchill. Perhaps you've heard of him. And the problem with Churchill is you never know what stories are true and which ones are just myths, right? Because there's a lot of things said about Churchill that when you do research on, you find out it's not true. For example, it's told of a time when he was speaking at a commencement in the middle of World War II and facing Hitler and all that. And he was sitting in the chair and came time for him to speak. And the story goes that he came up to a pulpit and he simply looked out at the crowd and he said, "Never give up." And then he went and sat back down. Well, silence kind of, people like, "Well, huh?" And after a few moments of silence, he stood up again and he went to the lectern and again he looked out over the crowd and he simply said, "Never give up." And then he sat back down. This time the silence got a little more uncomfortable, right? And he stood up and he worked to the lectern again. And again he simply said, "Never give up." And then he walked off the stage. Now, it's a great story, only it didn't happen that way if you do your research. But there is a story about him that I hope is true, because it shows you what a leader and what a tough guy he really was, right? He had this running conflict with a woman named Lady Astor, and they really didn't like each other, and they were constantly picking and, well, just saying things that you probably shouldn't say to one another. And one day, Lady Astor looked at Churchill and said, "Mr. Churchill, if you were my husband, I would poison your coffee." And he looked at her and said, if you were my wife, I'd drink it. Now, see, that's a tough guy, right? But what Churchill knew is that he knew who he was and who he wasn't. He knew that he never said, "I am the resurrection of life." And he knew there would come a day when he would die. And so he planned his funeral out every single detail. And what he planned was at the end of the funeral, after the benediction was given, he had a bugler stationed in the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral, and at a sign, that bugler began to play taps. The universal song that signifies the day is over. And then he planned something different. Because when that trumpeter finished playing taps, there was silence for a little while, and then he had a bugler on the other side of the dome play. Reveille. That was good. The song that signifies a new day, a new beginning, a new start. Because what Churchill knew is that he wasn't the resurrection. He wasn't the life. And he would proclaim with us that Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Now that's important. See, the resurrection reminds me and us that it's only Jesus that can defeat death. And that is important. But I got to tell you, if the resurrection only means something for me in eternity, then, well, it's just not enough. Because if my life is hell here, I don't need to be told just about eternity. I need the resurrection to matter to me today. And what I've learned and what I believe and what I preach and what I understand to the very core of my being, that the resurrection not only is for us in eternity, but it's a promise we have right here, right now. Because what you and I know is there's a lot of us who die long before life is over. There's a lot of us who go through so much stuff that part of us simply dies. We go through a breakup of a marriage or of a relationship. We stand at the grave of a loved one. We get a phone call that our child is sick and there's not much we can do. We lose a job and we simply can't find employment. The month goes longer than the money and we face financial ruin. You know those things. And part of us dies. And we feel lost and we feel alone and we feel isolated. So the resurrection better say something to that. And I believe it does. Just ask Mary. Mary in the Bible, in John's Gospel, John tells a story about Mary who was very close to Jesus and she loved him because, well, he saved her life. The story goes that he exorcised 12 demons out of her and saved her. And she followed him, left everything to be with him and to follow him. And after he died, she was the one, according to John's gospel, that went to the tomb to give him a proper burial. And when she got there, the tomb was empty, and she ran and she told the disciples. And then this foot race happens between the disciple Jesus loved and Peter, and they have this big competition about who's the fastest and who's the slowest and who's more courageous and who has more faith. And as they're bickering, they end up going back to the other disciples, and Mary stays in the garden. I want to just read, pick the story up right there where she stays. And this is what John writes. Mary stood outside near the tomb crying. And as she cried, she bent down to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels dressed in white, seated where the body of Jesus had been, one at the head and one at the foot. And the angels asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" And she replied, "They have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've put him." And as soon as she had said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't know it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she replied, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned and she said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. You see, Mary was alive, but there was part of her that was dead. And what she needed that day wasn't a symbol. It wasn't a metaphor, and it wasn't an idea. She needed, in the midst of her grief and of her loneliness and of her pain, she needed the resurrected Jesus to greet her and to call her by name. There may be some of you this morning that are here. Some of you are here because, well, you came in from college and you tell your parents you go to church every Sunday, so you're proving it by coming today. I understand that, Stephen. And some of you here because you lost a bet, right? And some of you got dragged here, it's Easter. But some of us here, we're right where Mary was. Things just aren't working. We're grieving the loss of a loved one. We're worried about tomorrow. We don't know where we're going to turn. We're overcome with this grief, with this loneliness. We feel isolated, right? And if you're in that group, then I really need you to hear about the resurrection. And I need you to understand the proclamation. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. And maybe that's not you. Maybe you're more like Peter, because you could ask Peter about this, right? My favorite gospel lesson on the account of the resurrection is found in Mark. And the reason why I love this one, because it is so me, right? It's like when Mark wrote this, he wrote it thinking of me. Because here's what he says. It says, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so they could go and anoint Jesus' dead body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they came to the tomb, and they were saying to each other, who's going to roll the stone away from the entrance for us? And when they looked up and they saw that the stone had been rolled away, and it was a very large stone, going into the tomb, they saw a young man in a white robe seated on the right side, and they were startled. But he said to them, don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. He has been raised. He isn't here. Look, here's a place where they laid him. Now, get this. Go tell his disciples, and especially Peter, that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. And Peter blew it. You know, Peter had the opportunity to get things right, and he messed up big time. On Thursday night, Peter proclaims, I will go with you to the ends of the earth. I will go with you to the very gates of hell, Jesus, and nothing can take me away from you, right? And then a few hours later, he's warming himself by a fire, and some woman says, hey, aren't you with Jesus? And he denies that he even knows Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. And the last person in the world on that day that wanted to see Jesus alive had to be Peter, because he failed. And he knew it. And Mark, in recording this message, wants Peter to understand that he isn't left out, that just because he messed up one time, they're not going to throw him out of the group. And so Mark has the man say, and go tell the disciples, and especially make sure Peter knows that this is for him. And if you have ever failed, if you have ever blown it, if you've ever failed at a marriage, in a relationship, as a parent, in a job, in school, whatever, you know what it feels like to mess up, to blow it. You start believing when people tell you you are of no worth, no value, you're unredeemable. But the resurrection told Peter, you matter. You can still be used. It is not three strikes and you're out. The resurrection is a new chance and a new beginning and a new start. And it's here. And so if you've blown it and you've come here to this place hoping to hear a word of grace, hoping to hear that you really are okay, the resurrection, well, Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. You see, some 2,000 years ago, Mary learned that the resurrection has meaning in eternity, but also has meaning now. 2,000 years ago, Peter learned that the resurrection has meaning in eternity, but it also has meaning now. And when I'm in the place where Mary is, or when Peter, where Mary was, or where Peter was, I don't need a symbol, and a metaphor is not going to do me any good. I need to meet the resurrected Jesus, who simply calls me by name and embraces me, and to tell me he's not finished with me yet, and to offer me a word of grace. You see, I believe in the resurrection. I believe that Jesus suffered, was crucified, was dead, was buried, descended into hell, and on the third day, he actually, in ways that I cannot explain and will never understand, he rose. And because of that, I have hope, and I know that today is going to be better than yesterday, and that it matters here and in eternity. Years after the resurrection, this guy named Paul, he sat in a prison awaiting his execution, but he knew the resurrection. And because of that, he was able to write with confidence that I am convinced that nothing, not cancer, not divorce, not death, not life, not failure, not bad relationships, not unemployment, not stress, not anxiety, not doubt, not fear, nothing will ever separate us from the love of God through the resurrected Jesus. Because I believe, Paul believed, Mary believed, Rocky believes, Jill believes, Don believes, Ken believes in the gospel truth that Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, and that's the gospel. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.